Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. 888-914-9149. We have, I've got a line or two open. You can grab it by calling 888-914-9149. Real quick, I want to just share something that you might say, well, that's obvious. I think it's obvious, but a lot of people in positions of power nowadays don't seem to get the fact that if you put a so-called trans-identifying male in the company of females, problems tend to arise. And this is from Redux, R-E-D-U-X-X. Interesting article.
What happened?
Well, listen, hold your horses. An inmate at New Jersey's Edna Mahan Correctional Facility for Women is speaking out against the transfer of trans-identifying male convicts into the facility. Speaking with this organization, incarcerated woman Miseka Diggs explained that the female inmates are scared to death of the men. Under the current policy, the men do not need to undergo any surgery. And Diggs asserts that most of the men are not on hormone replacement therapy. She stated that the majority of women who are incarcerated there have past trauma, many of them being victims of male violence, and the presence of men in the facility is causing them severe distress. Gee, do you think? According to a 2016 report from the Vera Institute of Justice, 86% of incarcerated women have a history of abuse and 77% have a history of experiencing intimate partner violence. Women's rights advocates describe the situation as a sexual abuse to prison pipeline. Diggs said, it's like you're living in an abusive situation. I have anxiety that I never knew about. She explained that she had been visiting the mental health services to address the ways in which the presence of violent men in the women's facility was bringing up her feelings related to her past. She says she talks about women who complain about feeling unsafe. She says, we can't express our feelings in fear of being put in protective custody. It's like lockup. If you use the wrong words, you will be uprooted and removed from your living quarters. So many women walk around in fear. We feel like we are part of some sick joke. This is a nightmare that we can't wake up from. The women here are traumatized over and over again, and it seems as if no one cares about our needs. We feel like second-class citizens with no rights. Well, the reason is because so many insane people in positions of power, they've gone along with the craziness of transgender ideology. And so if the guy says, you know what, I feel like a natural woman, so you better treat me like a woman and refer to me as a woman, and therefore I want to transfer out of the men's prison, I want to transfer into a women's prison. Where's the women's prison? Because I want to go there. And you don't have to have surgery. Ugh. You don't have to be on any kind of hormones or anything. You don't even have to put on a wig and slap on some lipstick. If you say, you know, I feel like a natural woman, I want to go there, they're going to put you there. And they're going to put you in the company of all these women. What do you think is going to happen? Diggs described her anxiety at having to share a shower with one of the male transfers, 6'7", serving a 30-year sentence for murder of his roommate. And the New Jersey Department of Corrections has recorded him as female. He's one of 27 men who have been sent to that particular woman's facility, the woman's jail, in just the last year. 27 of these dudes are now living amongst the ladies in this particular prison. It's not the only one. So can you see, can you see the problem? Of course you can. This terrible, toxic, dangerous, destructive ideology puts people at risk. It's as simple as that. It's just as simple as that. And you really should read the article. When I first read it, my eyes bulged out of their sockets. Like, oh my gosh, this is really happening? It really is happening. And this is the same thing that applies to the issue of, you know, like bathrooms. You know, if you have a women's bathroom and you have a guy come in, says, hey, you can't stop me because I identify as a woman. Bad things are going to happen. And they do. All right. I wanted to get that out there. And you can read about it on the show Twitter feed at Pat, at P. Madrid Show. Excuse me. Let's go to Elizabeth in Ironwood, Michigan. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick. I was prompted to call from one of your previous callers a little bit ago, Scott, who is homeless and living in the woods in Michigan.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to mention that I live in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, so I'm a Youper. And it's a small, isolated, remote area, and we have winter for 7 months a year. So we don't have, a big problem with homelessness or anything like that.
Yeah.
But our pro-life center, we truly believe from conception to the grave. So even though we focus on, you know, the pro-life issues of being anti-abortion, we also have, in order to support our ministry, we have a thrift store attached to it for children's clothing and cribs and whatnot. But anybody that comes in, we help. And there's lots of different resources that we're aware of that we can give to other people. Sometimes it's just simply someone calls us and says, I'm going to have an apartment come open. And do you have anybody on your list of people that you know is in desperate need of housing? Mm-hmm. And we help that way. We can help by saying, you know, when the Catholic Church is going to have their food pantry, or we can intervene on their behalf to work with them and work with the church. Or we have other resources, such as we work with CareNet, and you can take tons of online classes, whether it be budgeting or better communication with a spouse or parenting your teenager, or dealing with the aftermath of an abortion, even if it happened 30 years before. Mm-hmm. Or if it's simply just you want to come in and have a warm cup of coffee and talk and say, I need help. You know, we don't.
This is all great. I love the sound of this. Let me ask you a question, Elizabeth. Let's say that I'm forgetting his name, but the gentleman in Hale, Michigan, who's living in the woods.
I think it was Scott.
Scott, right. Okay, so if Scott's listening to you right now, and he might be, and if he called your organization, could you give him a referral that's local to him, or could you maybe get him some help from a distance? I realize you're nowhere near where he is, but is that possible?
That is possible. I mean, I'm in the same state, so I know what resources we have, and I would certainly be willing to make some phone calls in his area on his behalf.
That would be great. So how about this? Can you give your phone number and or your website so that obviously Scott's able to make phone calls, so that's good. So just in case he's listening, if he is listening, then he can reach out, and then maybe you can help get him situated, because we got to get him out of the woods. We got to get him into a place where
sure.
he's...
Sure.
Yeah, so give
the
me
name
info.
Of my organization is New Beginnings. And like I said, I'm in Ironwood, Michigan, so several hundred miles from him. But my telephone number is 906-932-0414, option number 2.
Okay. Is there thank you for that. Is there a website he can go to?
There is, but to tell you the truth, I am not by my computer, and I do not have it memorized. But if you just put in New Beginnings plus Ironwood, Michigan, we'd come up.
Okay, so Scott, if you're listening, and I hope you are, just know that Elizabeth in Ironwood, Michigan, far from you, but still in the same state, that she's ready to do what she can to try to help you. Okay? Well, Elizabeth, that's kind of you.
Well, I mean, It's what we do.
That's true. Well, thank God you're doing it. And God bless you for it. Thank you. Let's go to Daniel now in Yorba Linda, California. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Patrick. I recently graduated earlier this month from Arizona State Online. So I was really proud of that and embracing the culture there. But as you may know, the mascot's the Sun Devil, and they have the caricature of a devil and the pitchfork as their symbols.
Yeah.
So my question is, I've been watching, and I never thought too much about it, but I've seen watching baseball, softball, their jerseys say actually Devils, and the crowd mm-hmm. goes, "Let's go Devils." So I wore an Arizona State hat. It just says AS, but then I walk by people, they say, "Go Devils." So mm-hmm. my question is, am I overthinking this? Should I be uncomfortable about supporting, you know, this mascot?
Well, I don't think you're going overboard, and some people might think you are. I don't think you are. I think you have a sensitive conscience, which is good, better that than the alternative. And I would share your unease personally, because the devil is real. First Peter chapter 3 says that he's like a roaring lion prowling around looking for someone to devour. Jesus spent half his public ministry casting out demons. So, I mean, it's a real phenomenon. They are malicious and dangerous, and they hate us. So that's why I've always thought it's foolhardy to make it into a joke or a mascot, because there's nothing jokey about the devil. But I realize that not everybody looks at it that way, and for them it's just harmless, and it's no big deal, haha. I don't look at it that way. So I would share your perspective on this. I mean, for example, when our kids were growing up and came time to go trick-or-treating, we absolutely said, you can never dress like a witch, you can never dress like a devil, you can never dress like anything like that. If you want to dress up as Pope John Paul II or Mother Teresa or one of the saints or St. Michael the Archangel, which is typically what our kids would dress up as. So we just lay down the law, nothing in any way devil related. I remember one time that a relative gave a little plush toy to one of my kids when they were little, and it was a little plush toy devil. And, you know, with the grin and the tail and the pitchfork. And I said, absolutely not. And I think I offended this relative, because she didn't intend it to be anything negative, but she thought it was cute. And I said, absolutely not. We will not have that as a toy for our child, because even though it's all, you know, a joke, I don't want to give any ground whatsoever to either glorifying or joking about or in some other way minimizing the reality of the evil one. And so I ran the risk of offending her by saying, nope, sorry, we're not going to accept that. And but I think that was the right thing to do. So that's where my mind is, Daniel, on this issue. I don't think you're being extreme. I think you're being prudent, if you ask me.
Thank you, Patrick. I had a feeling that you were going to go that way too. And it was, like I said, it was making me uncomfortable. So thanks for reaffirming that. And I look forward to seeing your speech on angels at Christ Cathedral this summer.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up. Coming up, yeah. So I'll be sharing stuff on social media about that soon. Well, thank you, Daniel. I look forward to seeing you there as well. We've got time. Let's do it. Let's go to Linda in New Hampshire. Good morning, Linda. I can't do a good New Hampshire accent. Can you?
No, okay. Definitely not. I haven't been here long enough. But anyway, I have a quick question. Do you have any suggestions for Vacation Bible School Catholic edition?
Vacation Bible School Catholic edition, yes. Well, let me say a qualified yes. So at our parish in Columbus, Ohio, there is every year a big, well-run Catholic, you know, Bible, Vacation Bible School. But I couldn't for the life of me tell you what they use by way of a curriculum. So that's something that if you wanted to check it out, you could check with the parish at St. Patrick's Parish in Columbus. But I don't know. I mean, I know that there are curricula that are used for that. I just don't really know where you get them. You might start with some of the publishers, like Catholic publishers like Ignatius Press, for example. Their mm-hmm. website is ignatius.com. That would be a good place mm-hmm. to start. Maybe our Sunday Visitor. Theirs is osv.com.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. I see a lot out there. I'm a coordinator. I'm not a DRE, but I'm coordinator at my parish. Mm-hmm. And not that I don't think we're going to have time to get it all together this year.
Okay.
But I'm really looking, spending some time to try to find something that is, you know, Catholic. I mean, I understand all Vacation Bible School. There's a lot of great Protestant programs out there,
mm-hmm.
but I did want it.
I wouldn't use one of those. Thought of something. I don't know why I didn't think of this sooner, but I would recommend Holy Heroes, holyheroes.com.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with their website? Because they have a ton of stuff like this. Okay.
Yes. I listen to your show almost every day. So I've heard, I've used a lot of resources from Holy Heroes. Yes, I didn't even think about it.
Try them out. They may have what you're looking for. I think you'd have to probably just, you know, do a word search on their website. But I think if you did, if they had something, I mean, that you can be sure it's going to be of good quality. So
absolutely. I love their content. Love it. Love it. Thank you. I have another quick question. As an extraordinary minister conducting a communion service, who will give the extraordinary minister communion?
You're at a communion service. So let's say Father McGillicuddy is off that day and there's no priest to celebrate Mass. So the deacon leads a Eucharistic service. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, but there's no deacon. It's only the extraordinary minister, sacristan, leading.
Okay. And what's the compelling reason to do this? Is it that the pastor says you have to have this even though I'm gone? Because ordinarily that's something that the deacon would oversee in the absence
of the priest. We don't have a deacon in our parish.
Okay.
And the priest is out of town, and they could not get a priest to come in time.
What day of the week are we talking about?
Monday through Friday, 9 a.m.
Mm.
Daily Mass.
Okay. Well, this is one of those unusual scenarios. See, here's the thing. The sacristan, or somebody who's delegated that authority by the pastor, can lawfully distribute Holy Communion in the absence of the priest, but that has to be something that the pastor says, I'm arranging for you to do this. Now, if the pastor is just negligent in taking care of the parochial duties, that's a problem. But let's just prescind from that question for a minute. The church says that you can't self-communicate. So you as an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion, you notice that at Mass, the priest hands you or gives you Holy Communion. You don't take Holy Communion from the ciborium. Now, not that that would be entirely an impediment to this, but I think it's something that would be factored in. So what I'm scratching my head about is, why is the priest not arranging for maybe a deacon from another parish to come? Because that's the proper role of a deacon, to lead a communion service. In a situation like that, it's not really proper outside of an extraordinary circumstance for a lay person to do that, like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is a question, I guess it has several layers to it, but let's just say that there is no alternative and Father McGillicuddy says, I will be gone Monday through Friday. I'd like you to have a communion service. And if you want to receive communion, I suppose in that unusual circumstance, you would self-communicate, because there's no one else to give you communion. So you either don't receive communion at all and you distribute Holy Communion, or you self-communicate, which under normal circumstances, you're not allowed to do. So it just puts everybody in a really weird situation. I don't know why it has to be that way.
Okay. Yes.
Maybe you could say to Father McGillicuddy, could you please maybe arrange for a deacon from a different parish to come over and do this for us? And you might say, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And you might do that. Give it a try. Well, Linda, thank you. I'm going to work on my New Hampshire accent, probably unsuccessfully. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Real quick, FYI, today is the Feast of the Visitation, and Pope Francis has asked everybody around the world, including you, to join him in praying for peace. The Holy Father will pray the rosary in front of the statue of Our Lady, Queen of Peace in Rome, asking for Our Lady's intercession for peace in Ukraine and the end to wars worldwide. And you can join Pope Francis and everybody else praying the rosary together today at 11 a.m. Central, right here on Relevant Radio, right after this program concludes. So please join us for that. Let's go now to St. Louis. Let's go to St. Louis and talk to Les. Les, I haven't talked to you in ages.
Hi, Patrick. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks
You're
for calling
good.
In.
I know that. Good, good, good. Okay. So I heard you talking about a caller called in, was asking what you thought about having a vasectomy. Right. And you said that you thought, for one thing that came out, that it could be looked at as irresponsible. And so my idea on it, and again, you know, unless you're talking about bringing your religious beliefs into it, then I can't really argue that, because you believe what you believe, and, you know, I don't believe that, but
yeah.
In one way to put it. But if you're talking about just otherwise, I mean, I don't know. You tell me, how could you talk about it otherwise unless you're bringing your religious beliefs into it?
I think it would be hard not. I don't think it would be easy to talk about it otherwise without bringing my religious beliefs into it. Yeah,
I gotcha. So that kind of puts us at a standstill on that, because, I mean, I'll just put out there, and maybe you can comment on it, though, and sure. I can see what you're saying. And that is that I think if you said it's irresponsible, and I think it's responsible, because what you're doing is not bringing a life into this world that you're not able to bring into the world and for the child to thrive in a, you know, whether it's financially or otherwise.
Yeah, I think the best way I could approach this, Les, given our disagreement on the issue of the existence of God, and those who are longtime listeners will recognize you. Those who are maybe new to the program won't know that we have a long and happy history together, you and I, over the years, even though we don't agree that God exists. But in any case, I guess what I would do is take a natural law approach to the question that doesn't involve God or doesn't involve the Bible or anything like that. And I'll frame it this way, then tell me what you think. Sure. That things, including our bodies and things in our bodies, like the reproductive system, sexual organs, eyes, ears, etc., we can see in our physiology a kind of goal-orientedness, that things are that are intended for certain outcomes or certain goals in mind. So like to see would be the goal of an eye, to hear would be the goal of an ear, to reproduce would be the goal of the reproductive system. So even though I would base my personal belief on this issue on the basis of Catholic morality that I believe is revealed by God, since we don't agree that God exists, we'll maybe put that to the side for now, I would make the case that even just in a physiological sense, our bodies are expressing the goals for which I would believe they were designed, but let's just say you don't believe that they were designed. Nonetheless, they do have these goals. And they do have certain ends toward which they're ordered. So as a general principle, I would say when we use things in a way that is contrary to the goal intended by the thing or intended for the thing, it usually is bad for that thing. And so if you're using the reproductive system in a way that is contrary to its goal, all other things being equal, that's not as good as using it in a way that it is intended, so for procreation. So it seems to me that a vasectomy would be a needless mutilation of the body. And if you didn't believe in God, which you don't, and you don't therefore accept the morality that you believe is revealed by God, then I would say there are other ways to avoid conception that don't involve mutilating the body. So even though I would argue that those other ways are also immoral, nonetheless, they would seem to me preferable to getting a vasectomy. In other words, it would be less wear and tear, maybe we could put it that way, on your body if you were to resort to a different way of avoiding conception. And the last thing I'll say, Les, and I'll throw it back to you, is I don't dispute the fact that it can be a good goal. It can be a good and even responsible goal to say at this moment, at this time, given these circumstances, it's not optimal. It's not a good idea to bring a child into the world because we're in Ukraine getting bombed to smithereens by the Russians. Or the wife has a very serious illness and a pregnancy could exacerbate that or even kill her. Or maybe we're dirt poor and we don't have any food. We don't have any place. So there are circumstances where it's not a bad thing. It can even be a prudent thing for the couple to say, right now, we don't want to have any kids. So I don't want you to think that I dispute that, because I don't. But the means to the end is where we would have a difference of opinion. And I would say that this is a means to that end that is not justified given the circumstances. So I'll throw it back to you. What are your thoughts?
Well, I see the means to the end of procreating and, you know, with the reproductive system and having a baby is great. But I don't think that it's either or. I think because, you know, it's not that I don't believe in God. I've always said I do believe in God. I can't tell you the details. So then you would say, I'm sure many people would say, well, then how can you say what you think God thinks about this if you don't even know who God is? But I can't help it. I'm just being honest. This is what I believe. I believe we were created and created to procreate, but also to have the will to do, for lack of a better word, the right thing. And maybe the right thing might be to not bring that child into this world at this time, you know, because I'm sure you realize that a planned pregnancy, when everything is healthy as you can get it at that point anyway, is a good thing. And so that's just kind of how I see it.
Well, see, there we don't disagree on that point. I share that view with you. There are circumstances where it would be a good thing for a baby not to come into the world. So we're not at odds on that point. Where we are at odds, it seems to me, is the question of morality surrounding a vasectomy. And here's the interesting thing.
And that's where God comes into it, right?
Yeah, God, but also I think there's a natural law component that doesn't require God to be part of the conversation. But nonetheless, you're right. Yeah, that's where there is a bit of a fork in the road, where my approach to the topic is formed by certain moral principles that I do derive from divine revelation. So for that reason, I freely admit that I'm going to be looking at this through a different lens than you are.
Right.
But that's where I think there's a fascinating maybe undercurrent of a discussion here. How do we determine what's moral and immoral? I mean, some things I think are pretty clear, like it's immoral to kill somebody or it's immoral to steal from somebody. But some things are more subtle, like this one. Is it moral or immoral? And for me, what I think is a fascinating conversation is how do we know? I mean, what are the criteria that we would use to decide if something's moral or immoral? So maybe you can go first and tell me what is your system for evaluating the morality of an act?
Well, I mean, the obvious to me, and I think it would be a much better world without even talking about bringing God into it, would be, you know, to not take someone else's life. A life is of value. Don't take that life. And so that's one thing that's not moral, is to take someone's life. And then to steal someone else's things, Now, I know you're going to go into depth into those two things, but because, you know, if you have a rock that you've valued all your life and I say, no, give me that rock, and I punch you out and I take the rock, and I think that's immoral. But, okay, let's hear where you go with this.
Well, I'm not. Yeah, no, I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to set you up or anything. I'm just saying.
No.
We have to approach these real life examples, these real life scenarios,
sure,
with a certain framework of how do I determine whether or not this is moral or immoral. So, my way of doing it is I look first to natural. I don't look first necessarily to natural law, but natural law is a big part of it. In other words, what is this thing made for? Is this thing being used according to its purpose, or is it being used in a way contrary to that? But also I look at divine revelation. And so I have that informing my approach to this topic. But the alternative seems to me that if we don't have something that's objective to guide our understanding of morality, then somebody can say, well, if it's moral for me, then I'm going to do it. And you can't tell. It's kind of, in other words, it devolves into moral relativism, where it's moral or immoral, depending on how you feel about it. And I don't think that's a way that we can live in a coherent way, as certainly not as a society, if everybody gets a chance to decide for himself. Now, vasectomy is one of those things, because it's perfectly legal, it's medically available. And, you know, there's not, the Catholic Church is not trying to shut it down or anything like that. But at the same time, the Catholic Church would say, nonetheless, you shouldn't do it because it's immoral. So,
well, how is it immoral other than the Catholic Church and or whatever God someone believes in that says it's immoral?
Well, I guess that's what I was saying at the beginning, is that because God says that it's immoral, we have to look at the underlying reasons why. How can we know that it's immoral? Well, one thing is it's a disfigurement, an unnecessary mutilation of the body. You know,
and I say it could be necessary for the health of the child. You know, the health and welfare of the child that you're bringing into the world when that child is not, you know, when there's not a healthy environment, not planned.
Right, but you could just as easily say, well, we won't have sex. You know, for this week or for these days.
I don't know how easy that would be, and I don't know how good it would be. And I think we both, you say that sex is only because God gave you that.
No, I don't say that. I believe certainly sex in marriage, of course, is designed for the strengthening of the intimacy of the friendship of the spouses. So it's designed for pleasure. It's designed for mutual enjoyment, for deepening of the friendship, etc. But it's also inextricably bound up with procreation. So the two go together.
But you did say that it's simple to just say, I won't have sex, but it's not simple. I don't think your average individual is going to live a very simple life without sex.
Well, I don't either. I'm with you on that. But as a married man, you know, married now for going on 42 years, I have at least some experience in this area. So let me lay this one on you. So if your wife just had a baby yesterday or last week, I mean, you're a normal guy and you want the things that normal guys want. But But I'll bet you that if your wife just had a baby a few days ago, you're going to say, let's not have sex, because there's a more important goal in mind, and that is your health. And right now, at that time. So that's what I mean by saying, you know, we won't have sex right now. Rather than mutilate your body, rather than treat your fertility as if there was something wrong with it that you had to suppress or eliminate, I would advocate, without referring to God or the Bible or anything, I would advocate the simplest approach to it, just from a natural perspective, is rather than cut my body up, why don't we just refrain from what makes babies for a few days or for a week until the time is right and the fertility is no longer an issue? And then that way, just like you wouldn't impose that upon your wife or demand it of your wife if she had just had a baby a week earlier, you would sublimate that for a higher goal, which is her health. And you would say, for the time being, we're going to put this good goal of having sex to the side so we can achieve a better goal. Wouldn't we agree on that?
Some of the things you said, but I don't want to take up all your time and the listeners that are going to say, okay, that's enough of that guy. No. But just to, say lastly, my daughter is going to have, her fourth baby, a boy, in 2 days or less.
Congratulations, Grandpa.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I've been called worse.
Not by me, though. You're a friend, Les, yeah. And I always appreciate it when you
Thank
call.
You. Thanks, Patrick.
All right. We'll talk again one of these days, I hope. I got to take a break, and I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. Not much more, but more right after this. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep our stations running. Join in with hundreds of other listeners who have donated their used vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
All right. Remember, today is the Feast of the Visitation, and Pope Francis is asking you and all the faithful around the world to join him in praying for peace today. He will be praying in Rome, asking Our Lady's intercession for peace in Ukraine and an end to wars worldwide. And you can join the Holy Father and pray along with Catholics and other Christians around the world right here on Relevant Radio. We will broadcast the Holy Father's Rosary today live at 11 a.m. Central. Right here on Relevant Radio. It's going to happen right after this program is over, so please stay tuned. Let's go to Stephanie in Los Banos, California. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning. I just wanted to share my testimony on using natural family planning. And I heard your previous caller, you were talking about vasectomy, and you talked about NFP. So my husband and I have been practicing it since we got married. It's going to be almost 8 years. About 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with an illness that, the doctor told me if I were to get pregnant, it would advance my stage in the illness. And so, we had to consider, and, we were already practicing natural family planning. So we already knew, you know, how we can use that to our advantage to postpone the pregnancy. We said right now, it's not the time. So we were using that. And then when we got another second opinion, and she was like, no, you guys can try for another baby. You know, you can still manage both. And so we're like, all right. So we used NFP to postpone a pregnancy, but we also used it to plan a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And so we planned our daughter, and she is now 5 months here with us. And we were so happy to have that resource and to be able to show our love to each other, but also in a different way, you know, because in those years, it was about 3 years that we were trying to postpone a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. Those, by my husband respecting those timelines, those phases, when we could not have intimacy, mm-hmm. it was a different love that he was showing me, like a respect and knowing that we're doing this for a greater good. And for another goal, you know, to help you and get your health back up. And I just felt so loved in a different way, not physical, but by him respecting and.
Yeah. And also in putting you and your need for better health above the natural desire for intimacy. So he placed you above that, which is very beautiful. Very loving.
Yes.
Well, that's a good point, Stephanie. I think most people, when they hear about NFP, they assume that it's only about avoiding pregnancy, but it's also for those who want to achieve pregnancy. And it's a very, you just use the same information in reverse so that you know when the fertile times are, and that way you're more likely to have a baby if that's what you're seeking to do. So that's beautiful. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, may God grant you and your husband many happy years together and many healthy and happy babies as well. Thank you. Let's go to Kathy in Milwaukee. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. Yes, I was just calling about Les's point that he kept making about the vasectomy because some he doesn't want to have a baby, you know, because he wants to avoid pregnancy at this time. Well, prescinding even from the Catholic viewpoint, just on a raw biological level, vasectomy is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. So if for no other reason, then that's a good reason not to.
Yeah, I mean, it's so not exactly the same as killing a fly with a shotgun, but there is a kind of similarity there, I guess. It's, yeah, why resort to a permanent solution, quote unquote, when it's just a temporary problem? I agree.
Right. Right. And if the person doesn't have any religious beliefs, then, you know, sort of like you were arguing from a natural law theory. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, Kathy. I agree with you.
Okay.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go to Jim now, waiting patiently in Philadelphia. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Patrick. My daughter's getting married. She wants to invite all her cousins. One of them is in a lesbian relationship and, in fact, is engaged to be married and will be married by the time my daughter's wedding comes. My position is you can't invite them because you give legitimacy to their relationship. And it's a bad example for the kids. Our other position is, look, we extend the invitation. Who she brings is on her. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. I mean, there's no inherent reason why she couldn't invite a friend who's a lesbian. I mean, we should show compassion and respect for people by inviting her to the wedding and not knowing whether she'll bring her, you know, her girlfriend or whatever. She's not doing anything inherently wrong. I mean, I'm thinking about how Jesus dined with tax collectors and prostitutes. Now, I'm not Jesus. And your daughter's not Jesus, obviously, so there is a difference there. But I think that example is one that we should follow, that if there's a clear and present danger to your morals or to your children or to some other situation, or you could be giving the impression that you're endorsing something that you're really not, that's different. But if you're having a wedding reception and you want your friends to be there and she has a kind of friendship with this woman and she wants to invite her, I don't see anything about that that would be problematic. You know, it's a way to show the love of Jesus. Now, if she and her female friend start carrying on, yeah, that's a problem. Because if your kids are there, your grandchildren, I don't want to have to explain to a five-year-old granddaughter, why are those two women kissing? I don't want to have to do that. So, I mean, there are certain limits that I would, you know, respect. And if it was something where it could go in that direction, then your daughter could say, could you please just, we'd like you to be here, but could you please, for the sake of the little people, not engage in PDA? Now, that could be inflammatory and it might make the other woman angry. But then again, you have the right to say something like that if this is inappropriate, which it would be. So those are some thoughts that come to my mind, Jim.
My thought was not to exclude her or judge her. It was to invite her without the plus one. But this woman isn't just a friend. They'll be married. They're engaged. They're going to be married by the time my daughter's wedding comes.
Yeah. You
know? And even slow dancing. And by the time that happens, you already have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And, that's where you've got the cause of scandal. You know, for especially I'm worried about more about the children. You know, they don't need to see that. They don't need to know about that. And what a shame to have to explain that to them. Yeah. Yeah, this would be, it seems to me, Jim, a judgment call that would, if you invited the one person and knowing that she's going to bring the significant other with her and knowing that that's going to lead to slow dancing and other things, then you might just say, well, you know, under the circumstances, as much as I'd like to invite you, I'm not going to invite you. And that's hurtful and difficult, but sometimes you have to do something that's difficult when other people are at risk here. So that's what I would probably wind up doing in that case. My default is to always say yes, unless there's some compelling reason to say no. But under those circumstances, that might be sufficiently a reason to say no. Well, I hope that helps, Jim. Thanks. Let's go to Matilda now in Reno. Hi, Matilda.
Hi.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
So my question was, if my daughter's 14 and she's about to, I have to enroll her into confirmation classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not confirmed myself, and it's funny that the whole conversation today was immorality and the vasectomy and stuff like that, and that's mm-hmm. exactly how I feel, because I feel immoral, and you know, because I haven't done it, and I do have children out of wedlock, and so okay. And the purpose of this call was for that question, but because it is my birthday today, I wanted to be, my goal is to be a better Christian, a better Catholic of my faith, and that's something that I want to, I mean, I've been working on that.
Mm-hmm.
I was raised Catholic, but then, you know, you have friends, life, and so now with all my mistakes and stuff, I want to try to, you know, kind of lead on the right, but that's weighing
beautiful.
Heavy on my shoulders, I guess.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, Matilda, that God is working in your life that way. Beautiful. And that's his grace. It's working on you and preparing you so that you can come back to the house of the Father. Would you like me to share with you some advice on how to go about doing that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so first of all, your heart is stirring. God is stirring your heart with his grace, and he's preparing you to come all the way back home. And it doesn't matter where you've been or what you've done. There's nothing, no sin that you could have committed that's too big for God to forgive you. So keep that in your mind, okay? Even if you're embarrassed, and we are embarrassed by our sins, and you look back on them and you wish you hadn't done them. This is what's called repentance. So you're really getting to the point where you say, I'm really sorry, Lord. I'm sorry I did these things and I don't want to do them anymore and I need your help. And that's why Jesus right. came. He came for people like you and me. He came to save you. He wants to save you. He will save you. And this is the first step. So you're now starting your journey. So here's what I would recommend. Keep this prayerful attitude in mind and keep thanking the Lord. Lord, thank you for this grace. Thank you for the conversion that you're working in my heart. Thank you. And I want to follow you and follow your will. Then what I would do, you say you were baptized, right? Did you ever receive your first Holy Communion?
I did. Okay. I at this moment, I don't even know why I didn't get confirmed, because I was very active in the church as a child, as mm-hmm. a teenager. I was in the choir, and I at this moment I can't even.
That's
I should
okay.
go to Bible classes, and I don't
That's
understand
okay.
why I didn't do it.
It may well have had to do with your parents, who maybe didn't guide you along that path quite as well as they could have. So, in any case, all those things being what they are, you're a Catholic. And you want to resume a life of following Jesus and being in the church. So here's what you do. Go to confession, and you can either go when they have the times publicized. Typically, they're Saturday afternoons. Or you can make right. An appointment and just say to the priest, I'd like to go to confession. Now, obviously, you have the right to anonymity. You don't have to go face-to-face. If you'd prefer to be anonymous and go to confession in the confessional, you're perfectly welcome to do that. You don't have to be face-to-face. So either way, when you go to confession, just do this. Say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been however many years it's been since your last good confession. So if it's been 20 years, 10 years, whatever it's been.
Actually, mm-hmm. I just mm-hmm. confessed like 3 months ago when I had not confessed since my first Holy Communion.
Okay.
So I am working, you know,
good.
Towards that.
Well, that's
so
a big step.
That's something that okay. That's a huge step.
So that last confession 3 months ago, that was, you made a good confession. You told all your serious sins. You didn't hold anything back, right?
No. Well, the biggest sin was, you know, living out of wedlock, having children. Mm-hmm. That is so heavy on my shoulders that...
Did you bring that up when you went to confession 3 months ago?
I did, because I couldn't think of anything of all the other sins, because they're, you know, me trying to... Imagine, like, I'll have to, like, think since I was, I don't know, 10 when I did my first Holy Communion.
Right.
And
time is short, so forgive my interruption. Here's what I'd recommend. Get the Relevant Radio app on your phone. Okay, download it if you don't already have it. When you have it on there, open it up, and in the upper right-hand corner where it says pray, click on that, and you want to go to Confession Helper. And in there, you're going to find all the steps, how to go to confession, how to make a good confession, prayers before and after confession. There's also an examination of conscience. So go through that examination of conscience. It'll take you through the Ten Commandments. And maybe just jot it down on a piece of paper. And think about each commandment. Did I miss Mass on Sunday? Were there sins of theft, maybe, or lying? Sins of pride? Did you fall into any sexual sins? And in addition to the one that you mentioned about living out of wedlock, were there any other things? So just do your best. Be honest and take an inventory. Be honest with God. Be honest with yourself. And then when you go to confession, just say, here are some things that I didn't mention in my last confession because I didn't think about them, but now I've thought about them and I want to bring all this up, bring it all out there. When you've made your good confession and you do your penance, then you can start receiving Holy Communion right away. And that's going to get you back on track. And then you can talk to your parish priest about getting confirmed, which would be awesome. Thanks, Matilda. God bless you. Until tomorrow, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me.